ICEA Gear has outfitted over 10,000 bow hunters across the country, and we're continuing to raise the bar when it comes to bow hunting camo. New for the 23 season, we introduce our never-before-seen panel fabric system designed to be dead quiet, along with our patent-pending bow hunting collar. ICEA Gear. Features and function built for bow hunters by bow hunters. Learn more at asiogear.com.
Welcome to the Better Bow Hunter Podcast with your host, Nate Bailey and Jerry Goins, where we celebrate the ancient paths of our bear bow ancestors, where hard work and woodsmanship outweigh advanced shooting devices, where we value those who've gone before us and welcome those yet to come. Join us as we share valuable insight about the bear bow hunter's lifestyle. Hey guys, before we jump into this next podcast with TJ and Jerry, I just want to bring to your attention a sponsor, somebody that's really got behind the stuff that we do here at Bear Bow Hunters and the Life Outdoors. And these guys are great. They're right here in Oregon. They're just down south of us, down in Ashland, but they're part of the Rogue Valley, really wanting to be a part of the hunting community and the outdoors community and the fishing community, and they have come on strong with some sharpeners, and that's Work Sharp. So they have given me some products to give to you guys, our listeners, and there's stuff that we use, so it's not just like, you know, we go looking out for sponsors or things like that. What I like to do is bring stuff that we use and that we found some success in, and then bring it to you guys. So they were good enough to give you guys some stuff. So the first thing is the guided field sharpener. That's like the Cadillac of sharpeners that you could carry with you. It's got two sides of diamond stones, one coarse and one fine. The coarse one I use to take out nicks, the fine I use to bring down. But it doesn't stop there. The next thing is they have a stroping leather on it and chromatic. So you could get that thing razor sharp out in the woods. You know, say you miss. Yeah, you'd never miss, right? If you guys have watched any of my videos, you know that I miss. But when you miss, you could get that back to a razor sharp edge. So please, if you guys are listening to this podcast, please jump over, check out their website. It's good stuff. They show you how to sharpen your knives. They show you how to sharpen your broadheads. It's good stuff. All right, here we go. You guys aren't going to want to miss this podcast. This is one fun podcast. TJ and Jerry just go off and start talking hunting. It's great stuff. All right, enjoy. Welcome to another edition of Bear Bow Hunters Podcast, and today we have TJ Conrads with Traditional Bowhunter Magazine and Jerry Goins, so this is going to be an interesting podcast. How you guys doing?
Okay out here on the desert.
Yeah, doing well. Not here in the rainforest.
I'm totally done with social distancing and quarantine, and back to life.
Yep. You and me both.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Jerry and I just got done social distancing together up in...
that doesn't sound good.
Yeah. Well, no, it doesn't, but I understand, because it's like I'm still having dinners with friends and neighbors, and we get together quite often. And in fact, doing it again tonight. I'm not really worried about it.
Yeah.
Long story, but I already had the damn stuff back in February and got through it, so it's not as bad as people think.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So you have an inside as to what's going on with it then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, Robin, too, and probably about 30 or 40 of my friends have already gone through it and already tested, and, you know, everybody survived.
Well, good.
But it's, you know, certain people have underlying issues.
Sure.
But as long as you're healthy, for the most part, it's nothing really than just a bad flu.
Sure, sure. Yeah, my wife actually works in the hospital, and she's telling me exactly the same thing, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So one of the reasons we've been trying to do this for a long time, getting you on here, TJ, and I'm really excited that you're here. One of the reasons that I am is because I started bow hunting, or traditional bow hunting, probably about, 6 months before you came out with the first edition of Traditional Bowhunter Magazine. and I was totally lost. And so over the years, Traditional Bowhunter Magazine has kind of helped fill that void. And I think pretty much everybody that has been, you know, since the 80s to the 90s, everybody that started in traditional bow hunting could probably say the same thing about that magazine, that if it wasn't for it, it would have taken me, I probably would have thrown the bow back down. I probably wouldn't have taken it up. So that's one of the reasons I want to get you on here. And that being, I kind of wanted to ask you what you've seen over the years, the changes that have gone on in traditional bow hunting over the years since, you know, when you first started until now.
Boy, that could take a long day to really explain all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I don't know if we can remember that far back with our aged and feeble minds.
Hey, we're not that old, dang it. Just in body. Mind is still a little 20, 16-year-old at times, right?
At times.
Yeah. Well, anyways, the reason why I started it is that, it's really strange because I was in an organization, a club that we had. It was Treasure Valley Bowhunters, and there was, I forgot how many members there were. There was a ton of them. I was stationed down at Mountain Home Air Force Base, and I used to come up once a month and go to the meetings in Boise. And I found a guy, Danny Higgs, and I haven't talked to him for years. Great guy. And he was shooting a bighorn recurve at the time, and I'm going, I'd like to have one. So I shot his a few times and realized that I couldn't afford the $450 that at that time for a bighorn recurve. I think they end up going to a $1,200 or $2,000 after a while. But so I end up buying a Bear Kodiak one-piece recurve and went out and shot a bear with it that year, and I shot a deer and kind of got hooked on it. But then there was nobody shooting traditional. I mean, basically, we would have 500 people at our spring bear shoot, and three guys were shooting traditional bows. Danny Higgs, and you had a longbow guy. I can't remember his name. He was probably the best shooter I've ever seen. I think he was in Oregon. Huh. I want to say Chapman, but that wasn't his name. But anyways, he always won everything, and he bragged about it. In fact, we'd go to longbow safari, and he'd beat everybody.
Huh.
But I wasn't finding anything for me, and I wanted to know, how do you make arrows? How do you make a bowstring? How do you do some of this stuff? And we had the only bowyer left, I think, in the area. His name was Ron Robison, older gentleman, lived down on, he had a shop on 6th Street, downtown Boise, I think two up from Maine. And it was actually at one time it was a whorehouse back in the early part of the 19th century, 20th century, whatever it was, and it was next to a fire station. It was Ron Robison, and it was called Archery Shop, and you can still go by there. It's a historic building. It still has a round target on the front of it. It's faded on the bricks, but it's still there. They can't paint it because it's considered a historical building. And there's doors on the second floor that lead to nothing because at one time there was girls working there, and next door was a fire station. This is a great story, though, but Ron Robison was hilarious. He taught me all this stuff, but he also said that the fire station back in the day, in the early day, when there was still a whorehouse at the time, or it's a house of prostitution, whatever you want to call it.
Right,
But it was hot summer day, and the girls were up there. It's hot. There's no air conditioning back there in the time, and all the firemen were outside and cleaning their hoses or whatever the hell they do, and the girls were kept flirting with them, and they all jumped up and went up and hooked up with the girls, and then the mayor's house burnt down, and everybody got fired because they were all with the girls, and nobody was fighting the fire. This is what Ron told me. Ron was an interesting individual, but he taught me a lot about how to make arrows and how to make a bowstring, and I figured that, you know, and he had this really nice shop. Him and his wife, they lived upstairs, and he was downstairs. And he passed away back in probably 92 or 93, something like that. He was a great guy. I spent a lot of time with him around his old wood stove in there. And the idea finally came to me is like, yeah, you know, we're thinking about starting a traditional club. And actually, TBM started the same time we started, actually the same month. We had a meeting here. And the Idaho Traditional Bowhunters was formed after I had already started the idea ideating having a magazine. Originally, it was going to be a newsletter for the state, and then I said, you know, let's just make it four color. And I gathered a few people together, and I know I've told the story before, but every Friday we used to go down, and there was an archery range in the bottom of South Cole, and Larry and I and a few of us other friends that were shooting at that time were starting, you know, all shoot traditional, and had been for a while, some of us. And we used to go down there and we put up a sheet on top of the target butts on the end of the shooting range. And I forgot the name of the archery shop. It's long gone. And I had a little slide projector that my father gave me. And we had slides of animals. And what we'd do is that we'd put them in there and we'd pop them up and we'd shoot at them every Friday night. And then it got to the point where it got to where, you know, it would pop up for 5 seconds and you already had an arrow knocked. You took your time. You shot one arrow and we shut off the light. And then everyone go down. We turn back on and see how you did.
Right, right.
And eventually it got to the point where we were taking arrows out of back quivers and shooting. And then all the compound guys that were coming out, and the owner was a compounder, and they all wanted to come shoot with us, but they wanted to leave it up there and sight it in and use binoculars in a 20-yard range. And it was getting ridiculous, and finally we just had to end it. But every Friday night, it was fun for a long time, but there was a – I don't know what happened. Is the compound guys really wanted to get in there, and they just were destroying it, just like when we go to a 3D shoot. They would sit there and they'd stare at that thing. They'd pull up their binoculars. They'd adjust their sight pin. I mean, like, hey, just shoot the damn target, right?
Yeah.
It was embarrassing, and I mean, it took 8 hours to shoot 40 rounds, it seemed like, and so the same thing happened there, so we ended up, but every Friday night after that, we'd all go over to the Leader House, which was a pub down the road a couple miles, and we'd have beers, and it was, I believe it was late November, early December, it was a very snowy night, and we went over there, and I had my friends, I forgot all of them that were around there, it was like 5, 6, 7 of us. One lady, and we sat there, and I just told them about this idea I had, and every one of them, except for Fisher, just laughed and said, "Oh, yeah, right. It'll never happen. People tried that. It's not going to work. What do you know about it? This and that." And I thought, "Wow." So I drove home that night, and it snowed about a foot of snow that night, and we had a house up on the hill in South Cole where I could look up at the ski resort and the mountains and all that, Schaefer Butte. And I'm sitting there having coffee, and it's, I don't know, 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, and this big lumbering Hulk comes walking by the glass plate window, knocks on the door, and it's Larry. And he walked in, and I sat down, and I'm going, "You want some coffee?" He goes, "I don't drink coffee." I said, "Okay." "No, you want a beer?" "No, no, no," you know. And so I sat there, and I'm going, and we're just small talking. He's fidgeting. I said, "What's wrong?" He goes, "Look," he says, "I didn't sleep at all last night. I'm thinking about what you said." He goes, "I want to do this with you." And that's how it all started. And that was like probably December 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, something like that. So I went ahead and started a partnership, and we gathered too many people. One thing I have learned in life is that if you start a business, don't have a partner. And I had 5 other ones at the time. So it was, we started a partnership, and I officially formed it and marked the trademark for the name January 3rd of 1989 and gave ourselves 7-8 months, we wanted to have the first one out before September, the first magazine. And it was a slug. Had no idea what we were doing. So here we are 31 years later, and the world has changed. It's changed a lot, especially in the magazine industry. The internet and social media is really, it's really hurt all publications. I don't know if you've heard, but Outdoor, Sports the Field folded a long time ago. They were number one. Right. At one time, they had over 500,000 subscribers. Unheard of.
Yeah.
But Outdoor Life and Field and Stream have been in business since the late 1800s.
Yeah.
And they put out 12 issues a year. Well, 2 years ago, Outdoor Life, sorry, they went to 4 issues a year, down to quarterly, and what's happened is that the newsstand is not, that model of putting magazines in the newsstand is not working. Anyways, they went to quarterly. And then this past January, Field & Stream, which has been losing readership and money and advertising, went to a quarterly. After 110 years or something like that.
Yeah.
12 issues a year, they, a 66% drop. And that is, it's across the board with all physical, published media, printed media.
Yeah.
The fact is, from 2013 to 2016, 40% loss of newsstand sales. And every year, it's been hovering around the double digit. And last year, we lost 11.2%. People aren't buying magazines off the newsstand. And then what's happening, too, is a lot of times, a lot of the stores are cutting back their magazine racks because, there's too many titles, and a lot of places we get shut out because they're only going to keep the top 5 selling, which, is Cosmopolitan, it's Elle, and probably a couple, nudie books or something like that in magazines, they don't really sell. So they've cut back like probably 80% of the magazines that they will accept on the newsstand. So it's been very, you know, it's been a really tough slug for everybody. And a lot of magazines are coming off the newsstand because it's not affordable, it's not equitable, it's not an efficient way to get your magazine out anymore. And then when the coronavirus hit, everybody has lost over 50% distribution across the board. Every store is cut back. Some of them have stopped taking magazines. Barnes & Noble shut down.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've been pushing a lot on the newsstand. And one thing we found out is that we've been averaging over 12,000 original hits visitors every month to our website. And we're gaining subscribers from that.
Yeah.
More than we've ever gotten off the newsstand. The newsstand's always been a real problem. You just don't make money. You know, it's a feel-good thing. But that model isn't working anymore. So we're expanding. Right now we have a new business model. We're implementing it in the next couple, 4 or 5 months, thanks to Amanda Neidiger, the girl that works for me. She's used her degrees and her education to come up with a new plan, which I really like. We're actually going to more podcasts. We're going to do some YouTube videos for beginners and things like that, and we're also spending money elsewhere in advertising outside the realm of just the traditional market.
Cool.
So it has changed, you know.
Right.
Sorry, that was a short answer on a long story, right?
No, that's good. Yeah, I mean,
I remember how excited I was when I got that card in the mail saying new magazine, Traditional Bowhunter, because like Nate, I'd only been at it 6 months or a year maybe. Probably a year, a little more when that came out. Fortunately, I had some mentors here in Eugene to teach me some stuff, but that magazine was, I mean, couldn't wait to get it, see what could I learn new, you know, to help me along. That was just yesterday.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was nothing, Wheez. I mean, back then, we had what? We had Bow and Arrow, which is gone. We had Archery World, which changed its name to Bow Hunting World. And we had Bow Hunter. And all those publications, if they're still out there, have become paper thin. Remember, they were huge.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's just, it's a changed market. Of course, now with the internet, everybody's an expert. Just ask them. You know, and then it's...
You don't even have to ask.
Well, that's right. It's kind of like, how do you know when someone's a vegan or a CrossFitter is that they'll tell you as soon as they walk into a room. Well, that's about what's happening with traditional archery is that everybody knows more than you do. And, you know, and it's nice. I mean, it's nice in one aspect, but honestly, people have the attention span of about 7 or 8 seconds. And it's easier to, if you remember, I mean, not even, it doesn't seem that long ago, up until the 90s, you know, you couldn't find information. There was no internet. There was no email.
Right.
We didn't have any of this stuff. So it was like you had to do your research, go to a library, try and hook up with somebody. Well, now at your fingertips and with your phone, you can be anywhere and pull up any information you need. Is it the right information? About half the stuff on the internet is bad information.
And yeah, you got to have your crap detector on for sure.
Always, and you have to research multiple sources for information because there's just so much. Anybody can post anything they want anytime, anywhere on the internet. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of a, I don't know how you would put it. It's good and evil all combined in one. I mean, it's a great, honestly, having that information at your fingertips is something I never have dreamed of in my lifetime. But then again, most of that information you really have to double, triple, quadruple check.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I think that's part of the problem nowadays in the traditional bow hunting world especially is the fact that there's so much information now. Now there's like an overload of information. So what do you use? And and I think being traditional bow hunter, you guys – you know, being a trusted source and coming into that digital world and coming on strong, I think that's huge. I think that'll actually be something really, really good for the traditional bow hunting community.
Well, you hope so. We always make mistakes, and there's always going to be issues. And I mean, it's even Don and I, we had a Zoom meeting here, all my staff here 2 days ago, and like Don said, he was like, you know, gosh, even in the New York Times, I found all this bad data and all this other stuff. And I go, well, that's not probably the best place to find any journalism. But and he agreed. He's after these years, it's changed a lot.
Yeah, you know, things have changed.
You can't believe everything. Yeah. So, but it's the same thing. I mean, I you know, I get the Smithsonian, and I catch errors in there all the time. But, you know, a lot of times there's some bad information. And even with us, if we have four people proofread the magazine, there's still mistakes that get through. And every publication, every magazine has the same issue. So it's not perfect. And people just can't expect to have a perfect life out there. And same thing with the internet.
Right.
You know, we're hoping to put out good information, but some, and a lot of stuff has changed over the years. Right. You talk about what's changed. I mean, now carbon arrows, I remember when it was actually absolutely frowned upon.
Yeah, me too.
And, and now, you know, half the people I know shoot carbon. I don't, but that's, you know, that's just me. I'm kind of old school, and I like to make my arrows, and I like the smell of cedar when it breaks.
Yeah.
I get to smell that often.
Yeah. It's best if it has a little bit of blood on it, though.
Yeah. So that's, I think that's one of the biggest things that I've seen change over the last few years. You know, just this internet kind of revolution, or I don't know what you'd call it, but is the equipment changes probably, you know, I bet you there's more guys now in traditional archery shooting 3-under than there are split, you know.
Oh, probably.
And more guys shooting gap than there are guys shooting instinctive, you know. So you see these things happening.
Well, you know, and the other thing too, they can be more accurate. I've got a great friend who writes for me, Jason Westbrock. Yeah. You know, he's 3-under and a gap shooter. And I'll tell you what, this kid can shoot.
Yep.
I mean, flat out. If I can remember correctly, it was at a Compton, probably, you know, 15 years ago. We used to have this great big old bear. I think it was actually like a big giant polar bear target. And it was out over 100 something yards. And they would take money, and they'd take dollar bills and $5 tens. I believe there was a $100 bill in there. It was folded up. And he went up there one time, and he looked at the thing and saw that bill folded up there and went back, and he shot that thing from 120 yards and drilled it. I think it was a $100 bill. He may correct me, but I just remember it was the highest bill on that bear. And a lot of people couldn't even get within 20 yards of that thing. But he is phenomenal. I watched him shoot at they had an official, I don't know what you call it, a target shoot at Compton several years back, and he won it all. And I mean, he's a phenomenal, and he's a good hunter.
Yeah.
He's a gap shooter, but he's good at it, you know? And so people who, if you need that kind of accuracy and you practice long enough, you know, there's a lot of guys out there teaching that. For me, it's like, I don't need to, you know, hit a dime at 10 yards or anything like that. And I used to be a fairly good, decent shot. I think I've gotten a little bit worse with my eyes over the years, but I am a better hunter. I can get closer, so my kill zone grows a little bit wider.
Yeah, you get
closer.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the other things that I was going to ask you while I had you on here was so we talked about how it's changed over the years, but one of the things that I don't want to see change in traditional archery, and I think that you'll agree, is the fact that we have mentors. You know, traditional is a big part of the whole equation, right? I mean, and I could remember going to the Trad West Expos up in Ontario, and man, you could just go and talk to anybody that was within the world. And so I kind of wanted to touch on that, is who were your mentors? You know, because you guys are kind of my mentor. Jerry's one, you're one, through magazines and things like that. And Don, who were your mentors?
Well, obviously, Ron Robison was the first one. And after that, pretty much, I've known Glenn St. Charles since the early 80s. And he was a very close personal family friend. My two kids growing up thought that him and Margaret were their grandparents, because we saw him so often and we were always over there. But Glenn really was inspirational. I read all of his material. I spent time talking to him. I think I met him in 82 here in Boise. It was the first time he was speaking to the Treasure Valley Bowhunters. I was still stationed out Mountain Home Air Force Base, and I came up for that banquet. We had a little banquet, and Larry Hoff, who's still a good friend of mine, he brought him over, and I had the first chance to meet him, and him and I became very close friends immediately. And he really instilled in me probably my ethics more than anybody else. But as for shooting, it was all trial and error. I really didn't have any close mentors who lived with me. In fact, yeah. I think I started mentoring right away when I was the only one in the Treasure Valley Bowhunters at that time, or I should say one of two or three that was started shooting stuff, and I was the only one shooting wood arrows. And I remember Larry says, well, I wish I could shoot one of those bows. He was still shooting, I think he had a whitetail hunter or a Martin, something like right. that. I forgot what it was. Right. Those little, remember those little tiny $50 size, 50 cent piece eccentric round wheels. They, right. eccentric. They were just round. He was shooting something like that, and I believe it was a Martin bow. I don't know. Probably, I forgot what that was called. It wasn't called a Bearcat. Martin Cougar? Is that Cougar Mag?
Yeah, that's what it was. Sounds about right.
And I was shooting at that time the Bear, the Bear Kodiak one piece recurve. And he said, well, I wish I could do that. And then he all of a sudden he met up with Jim Brackenberry, who became, those two became very close friends, and bought a Brackenberry bow. And then he was shooting aluminum out of it all the time. And I was building my wood arrows. I was like, God, I wish I could do that, you know. And next thing I know, I'm teaching him how to build wood arrows.
Yeah, that's cool.
And he became, and then Larry went off the deep end. He became a very rabid traditionalist not too long after that, as you well know. Anybody knows Larry, he was big and boisterous, but he was still a little powder puff inside. He was a very emotional man, and was a good friend.
Yeah.
But you know, it was weird because I brought him into the traditional fold, and he went and just blew up out of it. I mean, he just exploded. So I think that, you know, for me, I learned most of it on my own, but my ethics pretty much came from Glenn St. Charles, reading him and spending a lot of time with him. I used to fly over there. My brother lives in that area. Besides having a house on Maui, he's got two places in Washington State, one up on a lake, which we're going to go visit him and have a little family reunion for a week coming up.
Cool.
But I used to go over there, and I would go and see Glenn, and I would spend hours. I mean, we've got photographs, and I've recorded hours and hours and hours of things that I still can't even release to the public because he lays fire and brimstone on a lot of people that are still alive. He was a very interesting buddy. And I do miss him. I remember when I shot my first antelope here in 2010, out here in the desert, and I was coming home, and I got text saying he had passed away, and it was heartbreaking. So, but he was, I would say that Glenn was, you know, really my personal mentor. And also I would read Saxton Pope, and I still do. I read Hunting with the Bow and Arrow every year, once a year, every winter. I sit down and reread it. And I always amazed at things I had forgotten.
Right.
But, you know, Art Young and Saxton Pope, they had the ethics. And I think that's what's really has kept me going is my personal ethic when I'm out in the woods and what I see and what's most important to me. It's not the kill anymore. You know, we're all bloodthirsty in the beginning, but
right.
anymore it's time with friends, or it's time with God, or it's just time to be in nature.
And
doing it, you know, my way, that to me is more important than anything in this sport. It's remembering our heritage, and it's actually, you know, having that love and that feeling for nature.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
That's a strong foundation that, you know, that I hope we don't, as we move into the digital age, I hope we don't lose that foundation, because I think that's probably what attracts me so hard to it too, is the fact that there's ridges. I've taken Jerry on some of them that I can remember my uncles on that are no longer here. And I tell Jerry the stories, and just like our little rock blind up there, Jerry, you know, that every time we pass it, we got to put another rock on it, you know, and that kind of stuff is just.
And then, and take a picture. I mean, and we were, when Nate and I were just out, what, a week or so ago, we had some talk up there about, I think it was with you anyway. mind falters these days.
Sorry.
The stages, you know, and we really wanted to kill a bear just because we have too many of them. But on the other hand, it was enough for me just to be out in the woods with a friend for a couple of days and just enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, I did bring home that one trophy that we found.
I'll send you a picture of that, TJ. You're going to have to see that. I haven't, I'm not going to ever release it. That's up to Jerry to release, but yeah, I'll send that to you.
Yeah, that was right out of a science fiction movie. This out in the middle of the woods is doll head with his hair all shaved off. It was pretty weird.
It was kind of scary, actually, when we walked up on that. That was kind of strange.
I took pictures of it, showed it the camera glib, and they're kind of going, what the hell?
But, yeah.
How far off the beaten path were you when you found that thing?
It was by an old campground.
Yeah.
No, okay. Okay. I just figured out who the hell would take a doll head out into the woods and leave it.
Which is scarier than finding a doll head out in the woods.
Yeah. You know? Well, it's not even a doll head. So it's like one of those mannequins that you that the people use to learn how to cut hair on.
To show wigs?
To show
wigs. Oh, so
oh, yeah. Oh. It's really scary.
It was one of those. I'll send you the picture.
That's even creepier.
Yeah.
It is.
I have a buddy, though. You know, he does the exact same thing. He uses one of those, but he'll put it in cattle guards by where he hunts to keep people away.
That's kind of a brilliant idea.
Yeah, he says, you know, people think twice about going across those cattle guards when you put that in the cattle guard. So
yeah, there was one of those on a cattle guard last November, and I took a picture of it for Facebook because it was just weird being out there.
Was that Nochco?
No, it was here.
Oh, okay.
We were close to my home for blacktails. And when I put it on Facebook, the Facebook face recognition came up and said, this is Brian Burkhart. Oh, no.
Did you tag him?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, that's funny.
That's kind of cool.
He's not even on here to defend himself, you guys.
Which is the best part, yeah.
It's all right. I'll see him in another week or so. We're going to all go fishing up in Alaska.
Oh, and, lucky you. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do social distancing too to a cabin in the yacht. So, yeah, right.
Cabin's 8x10.
Yeah. Something okay. like that. If that.
If that.
Okay, so we'll move past the shaved head and. So one of the things with both of you guys on here, I would love for people to know how you guys met. I've heard the story and I thought it was really, really a cool story.
How we what?
How you guys met.
Oh, how we met.
Yeah. Yep.
Go ahead, Wheeze.
Okay. Pose. And for people are going, what the hell are they talking about? We have called each other nicknames for close to 30 years.
Over 30, I'm sure.
I don't think I can't remember the last time either one of us used our first names in addressing the other. It would just seem weird.
Yeah, you're not Jerry. You are the Wheeze.
The Wheeze, and you're the Hose. Yeah. Yeah. So we met when I mentioned earlier, I got that postcard in the mail for this new magazine. And so I almost said TJ. I called Hoser up and said, hey, I'm a photographer of sorts. And what do you need? What are you looking for the magazine? And he told me, no, we're not going to do the big animals like everybody else or the dead animals or all that. We want to capture the essence of the sport or lifestyle. And then we talked for 2 hours?
Yeah, it was a long time, that's for sure.
About mule deer
hunting. Back then it cost a lot of money.
What's that?
Back then it cost a lot of money.
It did. Yeah. Yeah. And then that was, we had talked, and then I think it was in 1990, I think the 90 or 91, the National Blacktail Hunt. And Neil Summers found out that I had taken the week off to hunt that. And it was out here in Oregon. And so he calls me up and he said, hey, would you be willing to guide a couple out-of-staters, you know? And I'm thinking, I've been, you know, bow hunting for very few years, and
that was
I'm not a good hunter. 90? Was it 90?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, okay, I'll do it. But they have to be traditional shooters. If I'm gonna basically give up my hunting to guide for a week, it's going to be somebody with, you know, who's like-minded. And so at the pre-hunt meeting, the two guys I'm going to guide show up, and he introduces them, and it's TJ Conrads and Larry Fisher, who I had on this big pedestal. And they come in wearing their jackets with the PBS regular patches and all this stuff, and I just went, oh crap, I am screwed big time.
That was Larry. I didn't have a patch on.
And
sorry.
And so, I mean, I hardly got any sleep thinking, where am I going to take these guys to get a deer? You know, these are big shots, and I'm a nobody. And so we had a blast. We didn't kill anything. In fact, I kept Hoser from killing something. Didn't I? You had a doe coming towards you or something, and I crashing antlers together.
God, yes. Yeah, well, you know, the thing was, we were at the banquet, and Larry D. Jones had donated these screeching, supposedly deer calls. And they would have called in probably a coyote, but everyone had one of these at the dinner table, and so we're out there, and we're up there, and it's thick, it's rainy, it's obviously it's around Eugene, and it's just this nasty old rainforest stuff, and yeah. I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden I say, here comes this doe, she's feeding up this trail, coming right below me, and then I mean I'm there, I got an arrow knocked, and she's just got to come around a couple of those big old redwoods or whatever they were at the time, and all of a sudden, I hear this squeaking thing, and that doe, she turned around and she hauled ass all over the place and was gone. And then I hear this thing behind me. It's like effing Jones, and this call comes flying over my head. He didn't know what was going on. He decided to make a deer call and scared that deer into the next planet. And I just, and we laughed. We laughed so hard. It was funny as hell.
Oh. But I still remember, though, sitting on, with the weather had broken and it was nice and sunny, and I still remember sitting under a tree with you.
Yep.
And we talked for a long time.
You remember that also there was the you know, we were so far away and laying there, and Larry was snoring, and I just started tapping my feet together as we were laying down. I go, there's no place like home. I was hoping we didn't have to hike back out of that place.
Oh, yeah.
I do remember. Underneath an oak tree, I think. And,
yeah.
Out in the middle of the beautiful, it was after the rain had stopped and the sun was out. And it was a beautiful golden fawn type color, the grass that we were laying in. And you remember when Larry was
sleeping? We were sitting. We weren't laying together.
Well, I don't have any homosexual tendencies, you know. But I still remember this, if you remember. You and I were out dinking around somewhere, and we came back. And, you know, I think you had like a Suburban or some big sled like that.
Yeah, I did.
And Larry's in the front seat and with the radio on, snoring, sleeping. He always slept. He's always falling asleep. And you pulled out a rubber blunt, and you popped your windscreen right in front of him, and he woke up. You remember that?
I do. That was right after he scared the holy crud out of Betty and I.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Mark and Betty had joined us for a day. We went up one place, and you know, I got a photo that day of Larry sleeping, too. I'm wondering how he ever killed anything. But he's sleeping, and he heard the camera snap, and he opened one eye and gave me a two-word.
F you.
Yeah. But
he was always sleeping. I got pictures of him all over the world sleeping. just always asleep.
Well, we were... Betty and I had gone up to this one clearing, and we were looking around, and it was starting to get dark. And so we said, let's go back to the car. I said, okay. So she takes off the wrong way. And I finally caught up with her. No, car's down here. So we're heading down toward the car. It's almost dark, and we're almost to it. Larry comes flying around on all fours from behind a bush, growling at us. And I didn't know if I was going to get Betty peeled off the tree next to us or not. He scared us so bad. So it was a lot of fun memories from that week. And
you got a great photo of the three of us, too.
Yes, that was that week.
Yes, it was. It was that day, I think. The day you thumped your windshield with him sleeping behind it.
Right. Surprised I didn't break it. But
I know. I was expecting that to just get a little hairline crack, and the next thing you know, bouncing down that thing, and it'll run clear across the dash.
But, you know, that week, when I look back on it, it wasn't the phone call. It was that week that started a great friendship.
Yeah, because we talked before. We talked months before. I think you called me like October, November of 89.
Right.
And after that, I think we had planned to have you, you know, come out and hunt elk with me that fall, 90. And at the last minute, you weaseled out. And so we tried to do it for the next year, 91, and you weaseled out again. And that's where you got your name, Weasel. And then in 92, you came out, and we had a riotous time.
We did.
We had a great hunt. Like, I got great photos of us. Of course, we were young, black hair, black beards.
All of our hair.
Yeah, well,
black hair. And
yeah, we didn't turn blonde yet.
No, I remember or that blue. There was no way that you were going to let anybody forget that you had called me Weasel, because every photo, every article that I turned in and got published, you put by Jerry Weasel Gones. Yeah. And then it was in 92, I think, at the Longbow Safari. Yeah. I'm walking down a road. I am minding my own business. I hear some kid, "Hey, Weasel!" And I'm going, "What the?" And I turn around, and it was one of Fisher's kids, and he's behind a tree laughing. You know, of course, the kid said, I think it was the older one.
It could be Blake, yeah.
Blake. And, of course, everyone turns and looks that was in the area, you know, and I'm the only one in the road. But the moniker stuck, and I'm glad.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. You're always going to be Wheeze to me, always.
That's right. That's what's going to be on my, well, I was going to say headstone, but I'm going to be cremated, so maybe not. Just pour it on the ground and spell Wheeze.
There you go.
So you guys did go elk hunting too. I remember following that on Facebook, I think it was. And there was a big fire involved or something.
Oh, that was in 2011.
Yeah, that was that was a redo.
Yeah, that was a campfire.
Yeah, yeah. Had we fished yet? Do you remember? I don't remember.
Not by then.
Not yeah. Okay. So I remember watching that on Facebook because you guys posted quite a few good pictures of that trip, and I was like, oh, I gotta get to know these guys.
You know, we have never killed anything when we've hunted together. I guess except for the caribou hunt.
Caribou, yep. Oh no, we shot grouse. You nailed that one that trip. That thing, God, that must have been a 50-yard shot up there in that Ponderosa pine, and you drilled that sucker.
With a Delta II, I mean,
yeah, well, that's what you
Magnus
have to do.
2, I think it just fell to the base of the tree. It was,
I know. I go, that's awful far. He goes, I think I can make it. I go, I'm going to watch this, and I'll be damned if you didn't knock him right out of that tree. And I thought I was going to watch it go down the mountain. I go, wow, well, that's pretty good. I'm not shooting.
What was impressive was you finding the arrows that we missed with.
Yeah.
Like, what, 200 yards away in the woods? And you came back with all of them? But we had a good time. We had a great time.
Remember the peekaboo buck?
Yes. Yes. I could not believe my... I looked at you like, what are you, an idiot?
I've been walking down in the bull, and I followed... At the time, we had paths that they were there for years. There was all kinds of game trails that ran all the way through, but in the last 15, 20 years, there's been the bark beetles really devastated the firs up there, the subalpine fir. And so trees are falling every year, and these old ancient trails used to be able to walk across to get from one side of the bowl to the other and drop down another mountain. They've changed. You know, that'll go good for 30 yards, and then there's three or four offshoots because there's trees that have fallen all over the place. Well, so I found this one path and crossed a couple seeps. And I got to this one place, and I look up, and this big 4x4, in velvet, mind you, stands up, and he's not 25 yards from me, and I'm going, oh, you're kidding me. So I go to knock an arrow, and he just starts taking off up the hill, stops, and he starts running across the way, and I shoot right in front of his brisket as he's trotting by me and drill it into this tree. I'm going, my God. And I'd seen him twice, and so we're down there. I told Weez, I said, I got to show you this buck. I said he's still going to be there because he had this perfect little bed on top of this little knob. I mean, it was, 15 yards from us, 20 yards at best?
Yeah.
That. And we're walking down there, and I said, knock an arrow. We got water first on the seep on the other side of this little ridge, and we come around the corner, and I said, knock an arrow. And I'm going, yoo-hoo, Mr. Buck, peek-a-boo. And Weez looks at me and goes, you got to be kidding me. And I look at him, and I look back up, and that buck stands up, and I'm going, Christ, and I pull back the chute, and I hit this damn dead tree leaning forward right in front of us. I didn't even see it. I still want to get that
arrow. 8 yards in front of us or something. he
goes, pop, pop. And that deer just hops up, and I'm going, my God. I looked at Weezy, and he starts laughing. He goes, I cannot believe that deer was there. He never came back because I checked three more times. I think he had enough after three of those sessions, but I think Weez, you got a photo of that tree with my arrow in it.
Not only do I have a photo of the tree with the arrow, I have a photo of you pushing the tree over, pulling the arrow out, and then standing triumphant with one foot on the tree. I'll have to post those, maybe.
The peekaboo buck.
Man, that's awesome.
That was a good time.
It was. I'm kind of sorry the years have flown by and we haven't hunted more together.
Well, we should.
Last time was 8 years ago.
I know.
Well, the best hunt ever.
Yeah, it was good. But, you know, it's a nice place. Did you see the Virgil's video that he posted the other day about me calling in that buck for him 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was right down at the wallows. Right above the wallows.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, and I told him that was opening day. I said, well, let's go down and check these wallows. And I've killed a lot of elk right there in that spot. I missed a couple black bear, too. And so we went down there, and I come over the top, and I all of a sudden, you know, I do a call, and I hear this bugling, and there's a big bull way up above the upper meadows. And I put him up there. I said, you know, go by this tree, sit there. I'll go back. And I'm standing behind a subalpine fir, big old tree. And I did some cow calling. I called this one time. And then this 4x4 comes charging in about 15 yards right in front of Virgil. And I'm standing behind that tree. As soon as I bugle, he starts just roaring in there. And then the big guy's up on top bugling. And that bull was staring at the tree like, okay, where is that elk? And I'm behind it, and I'm doing some cow call. I'm turning around, and I'm ew, ew, behind me. And all of a sudden, he's looking right past Virgil. Virgil's right in front of him, probably about 10 yards. And he's just sitting there with an arrow knocked. And finally, this bull decides he's going to come around behind me. So he turns to circle. And he's walking away, and I see Virgil rise up and start to draw, and I cow-called, and the bull stops, and he slips an arrow right into it, and it runs about probably 30 yards right down into a wallow. And I called again, and he stopped, and we're sitting there, and I didn't see him run out of that bull, and all of a sudden I heard something fall. And Virgil turns around and walks back to me, and I thought, I don't know if he hit him or not at that time, because I heard it hit a brush. It hit some brush. It was a little tick. And I go, like, what? What? And he just goes thumbs up. He comes over and then he just starts shaking. He's so excited. So he sat down and I said, I'm going to make some coffee. So I pulled out the jet boil and he goes, you want something? He goes, no, I can't. So you want something to eat? No. And
I'll take a Valium though.
So, I mean, we didn't wait 15 yards. I said, let's go. We walk up there and I point. He goes, is that him? I go, that's him. I said, congratulations. Awesome. It's like 8:30 in the morning. I'm going, oh no, we're way down the bottom of this hellhole.
Oh yeah.
But that was a yeah. You should come out again. I have a friend coming out this year because my French guys wanted to come out, but with all this issues going on and air travel, we're going to postpone that to another year. They wanted to come out because my friend Xavier Pagenaud, he's getting kind of old. He's 80. Very good guy, great guy. Last year I was able to take Robin and some friends, and we all went and stayed in his castle and did a rabbit hunt there. And he's not doing well, but they all want to come over and five of them, and hunt elk with me. And wow. I said, well, this year is not going to work. Number one is that we were supposed to have the Archery Hall of Fame induction ceremony, and it was scheduled for August 30th, opening day of deer and elk season out west. And it got canceled because of the COVID scare. And I talked to Diane Miller, and she's the executive director. And she goes, what's your opinion about holding it? I said, Diane, I would come, as you know, because I've been a supporter for 20-something years. A major supporter. And I said, I would come except for one thing. I said, she goes, well, we've got almost 600 people signed up for the banquet. I said, you won't get 50 or 100 people with this. And I said, it would be a failure. So we've postponed it till May 21st, 22nd of next year. But anyway, so that was this issue. And then this other stuff. And I'm thinking, oh, man. So this year I've got a friend, Nick Matthews, Native Nick. And he's coming out. He's a never hunted elk, so he's coming out to hunt with me for 2 weeks. So that is this year. So that's pretty much all my hunting is going to be stayed locally, although I do have a trip in August. I'll be going someplace to be told later.
Yes. Gotcha. Cool. Yeah, you know, maybe we ought to look at maybe putting a spring bear camp together next year. That'd be a fun time.
Sure, that would be great. I know I did a podcast with the boys from Black Widow here a while back, and actually back in Springfield this February, and they have an annual Black Widow bear hunt up in Canada. And he said, well, you should come up sometime. I said, I've never been invited. He goes, well, you're invited. I said, well, maybe next spring we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens with the world. Everything's going crazy.
Right.
And
right,
I think a lot of people are probably just sticking close to home.
Well, what else are you going to do? I mean, flying is a pain in the butt. I mean, my gosh, I'm just saying, this flight I've got booked coming up for a week from Monday to Anchorage. I just got a message while we were talking here that says, hey, they've changed your times again. I mean, they've already canceled one flight, or actually two flights now, so I've had to rebook it. This is three times I've had to book this flight, and now I have to go and find out what the deal is. It's absolutely crazy trying to fly.
Yeah.
And they want you to wear a mask in the airports and flying. You know, on this four-hour trip, it's like, you got to be kidding me. Really? Can I just sit there and drink gin and tonics, please? Yeah. it's I think you won't see the economy bounce back for a long time. We've done so much destruction. I think that we are a good 10 years from getting back to what everybody wants to call normal. I don't accept the new normal. I'm going to go back living the way I should, but I'm still going to fly. I'm still going to do what I want to do. I don't wear a mask. I'm not worried about it. I know what it is. But, you know, there's a lot of people scared to death, and I think it's been overblown.
Yeah, totally.
I think we're and every day we're learning more about how wrong they were about a lot of things.
Right.
Right. But you know what? It was politicized, do you?
Oh, not at all.
Should we even go there?
No, we're not going to go there. Politics.
Oh, yes.
My opinion is they all should be hung on. Start over. Get a third party that actually can do something, because neither one of the two out there can. So.
The pragmatic party.
Let's not talk politics.
Okay. Sorry. My bad.
I'd rather talk about religion than politics.
No, I was, I'm tentatively, if I draw a tag, scheduled to fly to Kansas next November to hunt whitetail with Steve Hosman again. I'm hoping that comes through, but otherwise it is just wherever I can drive here in Oregon.
You know, I've done enough traveling. You know, I've hunted enough areas that I'm getting to the point where, after all these years, it's getting too expensive to do a lot of the hunts that I used to be able to afford.
Right.
Africa's out of hand, and it's changed so much since, you know, I spent so many summers over there back in the 90s that all the way to 2001, and I'm bored with it. It's changed so much. I don't really want to go back. And the same thing, like going to Canada, and it's getting too expensive. And, you know, I don't know. I'm like you. I would just as soon stay here in the States and hunt with friends, go, you know, get a non-resident tag, go hunt some whitetails, shoot a bunch of does, do something else, chase turkeys, hunt elk in my home state, bear hunting someplace. You know, the old adage is that we're getting old, and you know, how many more trips up a mountain do I have? How many more falls are left? Granted, I hope there's at least 20 or 25 more, but you never know.
Yeah, and I've been struggling myself with that as of late, and at one point was saying, well, maybe it's time to hang my bow up and pick up my fly rod and go with that, but it's such a part of me that I just can't do it. And so it's like time to just change species, like you said.
Yeah.
You know, hunt bear around here, go someplace, hunt deer. Public land blacktail hunting around here is ridiculous. Well, we got so many bear, cougar, wolves that the deer populations are taking a huge hit. But
time to hunt predators.
Yeah. Or like, I'll tell you what, that Kansas hunt 2 years ago, that is an old man's hunt right there. And I could do that till I was 85, no problem. But when you live out here in these mountainous West states, things are different.
Well, that's true. I'm not there yet. I mean, I'm like this morning I was supposed to go take a hike up the mountain. I've been loading up my pack and my camera and load up coffee and a snack. And I'm trying to put on a few, you know, a few miles, 3 or 4 days a week, climbing up the hills behind here. Actually, I'm going to climb Damskin Mountain here next week before I leave. But just trying to stay in shape because, you know, I did that goat hunt last year, and I did fine. But I put myself into some situations that I realized that, you know what, you fall and break a leg, no one's going to find you in time. It's, you know, end of story. But it was fun. It was nice to actually be someplace in a wilderness area. There's no roads. There's no motorized vehicles. And, no bicycles and none of this crap. And I'm up there at 90, well, I think the highest I was 9,400 feet, camped down these lakes with a fly rod, caught some gorgeous trout, had an elk bugling camp one morning, which there's no tag available, but and where I was at, it was 12 miles out, and I was not going to kill an elk there. I knew that if I shot a goat, it was a 3-day trip to get him in and out of there, so, or her, whatever it would be. But I'm still in shape. But I feel, you know, I hurt a little bit more than I used to, but I'm trying to stay in goat shape is what I like to say. And I don't know how many years I have left with that. So I will try again and, hopefully get an opportunity to get tagged before I'm not able to go up and down those mountains like I still can do. And I even surprised myself, even after this last little bout with the virus, I had some lung damage done, and my doctor said that, well, you know, what we've seen is that you come back fully, and it's gotten better in the last couple months. But okay. I thought I was losing some air, but I can still hike these hills, and I can keep going. I don't have to stop for air. I stop because maybe, you know, I need a break in my legs or something like that, because it's pretty steep country where I'm at. But I can still do it, and I'm hoping that I can still do it for a long time. But you never know. It's day to day, right? I mean,
yeah.
We were all young, dumb, and bulletproof at one time. Everybody was, you know, and your mind still is there, but the body says, dude, you know what? You have really put on some miles in your life, and they've been hard. But, you know, I wouldn't give up anything I've ever done. I've been lucky. I've lived a full life, and I expect to actually do a lot more. But I think all those exotic hunts that are done, number one is they're just too expensive, and I'm scaling back on my, you know, all my stuff. A lot of people don't know it, but I don't take an income off the magazine. And so I'm just living on my own investments and my deferred federal retirement, Social Security, things like that. I don't need the money. I mean, I'm happy. I don't make a lot, but it's enough. And I don't have any debt, so it makes it really easy at this point. So I'd like to slow down a little bit more. try and get the girls to step up, run the magazine, keep bringing some younger people, and just make sure that it keeps on going. But I'd like to spend more time just sitting and, you know, up in the woods, climbing a hill, and do my type of social distancing.
Right. That's therapeutic, to say the least.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, we sat in a clearing this year that you couldn't get to with the vehicle, and then just sat there. And we probably should have sat there all day long, but there's something to be said about that, where you sit there and you're just talking to somebody and drinking a cup of coffee. And you know, I'm starting to get more and more like that myself. I want to just I want to be around people and share those experiences.
Well, you know, the secret of life is enjoying the passage of time, and a lot of people do not stop and see the beauty and all the stuff around you, all the good things that are going on. And living in the moment is really, it's probably one of the hardest things that I've ever, I still haven't mastered it. I do my yoga, I do meditate, trying to keep my mind focused on the beauty around me at all the time, and finding something beautiful in everything. So sitting outside in the evenings, watching the sunset, listening to the birds, it's like those are important things that you're enjoying every moment. And you don't know, may not wake up in the morning. You know, it's not our call. You know, we're only given so many breaths, and nobody knows when that last one comes. Yep. And the main thing is that make sure that your life is full. Get those memories, you know, tangible items. I've realized this, so I've been selling off a lot of stuff. You know, we're selling properties and getting rid of stuff and vehicles and Harleys and things like that, because those things don't mean anything anymore. What means them and is memories, photos, times with friends, these experiences are the most important things. It's all you have in the end if you live long enough. Just like my neighbor, he just went back down to California, and his dad's dying, and they reminisced, and he, you know, he's coming back, and he said his wife was asleep. And we're going over there tonight for drinks and dinner. And he said, you know, I had a long conversation with God, come to peace with my father, and realize he's had a real long life. And he says, I hope that I do too. And I said, you've already done enough stuff. And I said, our lives are really complete. If they're to end today, I think all of us can say that we've had a good time.
Yeah. You know, and relationships are the big thing. That's it.
Well, friendships and love. And that's why I always tell everybody I love them, because you don't know if that's the last time you're going to talk to them. And you have to mean it. And as I've gotten older, I've matured a lot in one aspect. Well, actually in a couple. but you know, it's life is very precious. Yeah. And the thing is, and everyone whines about getting old, and we do complain a little bit, but I don't mind it when I look at the big picture, because there are a lot of people that never have the opportunity to live a full life. And I mean by that is, you know, so you go through the bad things. You know, I buried my parents. What happened? People get divorced. Kids, kids are killed. You know, the worst thing that can happen to a parent is to outlive their children. And, but, you know, these people, and I have lots of friends like that, but they bounce back. And the thing is that getting old is kind of, it's a gift, because to see how life progresses as we have, you know, from when we were bulletproof and kids, and where there's like, today was so far away. My God, it's like, I'll worry about that then. And then, you know, all of a sudden, 20 years behind you, and here we go, you know, you're there. But you filled that time with all kinds of experiences and friendships and memories and things like that. And so I think that probably one of the most precious things in life is being able to experience a full life. And by that, I mean growing up, enjoying time, raising a family if that's what you wish, and going through death in the end. And we're all going to go there, but why not experience everything? I mean... That is life.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get so philosophical.
No, as I get older,
you know, it's interesting you mention that, because I'm just finishing up a photography article for Compton's magazine, and I mean, that's one of the points in there is take photos, enjoy your time, because, like you said, in the end, the photos are all you're going to have left. And
that and the photos in your head, and I look, memories.
But those photos jog memories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I look at our book from the caribou hunt, and I do that fairly often, and I'll come across a photo and go, oh, yeah, you know, I remember this about that that I hadn't, that I'd forgotten. And so, yeah.
Yeah, the fishing was fabulous.
Oh, wasn't
it? Oh my God, I think that those poor fish were sore in the mouth by the time we got done with them after 3 or 4 days of dropping flies in front of them. Remember, they were all underneath the boat. After we catch them, they wouldn't even leave.
Yeah, I was videoing them just hanging out under the
boat.
Well,
you dropped your GoPro down there and took pictures wrapped up against their face. They're like, they're just staying there like, dudes, we're not going to fall for that again.
Well, I've got you on video. We'd been fishing for a couple hours and catch and release. And they all ran, what, 2 to 3, 4 pounds?
They were giant. Those are some of the biggest brook trout I've ever caught.
But you looked at me in the camera and you said, I'm tired. No.
You know what? That was a great trip. Those are good memories. And that the photo book, like I said, I just pulled those out actually last week and I was showing them to somebody. And I think I've got several photo books, but that was one of them that I go through that and I'm just thinking, you know, that would be something I wouldn't mind doing all the time. And that, you know, that's gone now. There is no Quebec Labrador caribou hunting right now.
I was hoping to do it again too.
Yeah, well, times change. This is like with Africa, and I had this long discussion with a bunch of people here recently. And I did a podcast the other day with Rich Lopez out in Maryland, Sykesville, Maryland.
Yeah.
And he says, well, I've never been to Africa. And I said, you know, I'm back in the mid-90s, and I was going all the time. And I said, I was speaking about Africa, and I kept telling everybody, I said, go now. It's affordable, and it's there. Go now. And now it's there for a long time. It kind of got out of hand. I mean, they're killing white farmers, and it's just, it's not the same. So what you and I did on that trip may never be and never happen again. But we experienced something that very few people did, the camaraderie, making some friendships, a great time. We killed 2 caribou apiece. We had fun. We got great photos of us when we were bulletproof.
Yep. Yeah. Turn Shane on to a traditional archery.
Yeah. Yeah, even killed a ptarmigan, a pea ptarmigan.
A ptarmigan, yeah.
Yes.
Pea ptarmigan. Those things were so stupid, I couldn't believe it. We should have bought tags. I mean, I wanted to get a photo of them flying or video of them flying, and it was, what, half a dozen of them at my feet. I mean, literally at my feet. And I'm walking, and we finally got to the edge of the lake, and they took off flying. They flew right almost into you.
Yep.
And
but I didn't have an upland bird tag.
And no, but neither one of us did. Yeah. But Shane did, and he was killing them with wrist rocket, yeah.
Yeah.
Slingshot. With just gravel, not even, I remember, why don't you try my bow? And I ran back and got it, and boy, it was about his fifth shot. He just drilled this thing, and I never seen anybody so excited over 12 years old, you know?
Oh, no.
So it was fun. A lot of fun memories from that week.
Yeah, except for we had some idiots in camp, but that's okay.
Yeah. Can't do much about those guys in the Newfie.
The Newfie, yeah.
Those are stories that didn't make it into my article. And for the best.
I just noticed that you took a lot of pictures of what's her name? Who was her
Who?
Name? The outfitter's wife.
Oh, only 3 or 4.
100. She was a good looker, that's for sure. She was a sweet girl. Yeah. She was a very sweet woman. I really enjoyed her.
Yeah.
That was a good time, Louise.
It was. It was. I hope there's more times ahead.
You guys need to get back together.
Well, we need to make it happen. That's the thing. Yeah. And, you know, it's just priorities, I guess. I'm trying to get through. I'm trying to get all these monkeys off my back and get everything taken care of and in line and making it a simpler life. A little bit quieter where I have more time to myself. And right now I've got a bunch of writing assignments and I've got some other work to do. And we've got a photo shoot this weekend, video to start doing a set of YouTube videos for the beginners in traditional archery.
Right.
I'm not sure how that's going to go, but I imagine it's going to be a big goat rope before we get it settled down as to what we're doing.
Oh, I'm sure.
You got to script these things, right?
Right.
You can't just, let's just come out and shoot this. I go, do you have a script? You know, No. I said, we need to have a script. So
be prepared for the people to tell you that you're doing it wrong.
Oh, yeah. That's going to happen. Oh, yeah.
That happens. Yeah,
everyone's an expert. Just ask them.
Yeah. I know.
It's the way it is today. And, you know, everyone's an expert. And I just say, fine, whatever. Do what you think and just let it go and realize that, you know, I don't even know where to start with that. I'm not even going to go there. I can't, you know, it's why I worry about things that are out of your control. There's no sense worrying about things you can't.
Great that you're trying to reach the new archers, because frankly, we're getting a lot of new traditionalists coming into the ranks.
Yes, we are, quite a bit, and a lot of young ones that I really like.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that too.
Well, you know, we brought Becca Garris on, and you've read her piece about hunting with her baby on her back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, well, she's going to be one of our two chefs for a new Wild Cuisine column coming up.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
Her and my very dear friend Margie Nelson over in Livingston, Montana. She's a fabulous chef, and she's a big-time hunter. Compound Bow, she's just a super supporter of me and the magazine, just a really wonderful woman. And Becca's brings in a young female, and she's very excited about being a part of the magazine, so are we. And Don's working with her, and so I think she's got the first cuisine column. Wild Cuisine is what the new column will be, and it's going to be, and there'll be guest editorials too on that, but it's a short one page probably about doing something in the kitchen with wild game at most of the time, or something special. So it's going to be interesting. I've got two excellent writers and good photographers that'll be working on that, you know, the girls, and possibly guest editorials. Who knows? Maybe I might throw something in there sometime.
I was going to say, you could probably write that article, couldn't you?
Yeah, well, yeah, but you can cook a little.
A little bit. So, yeah.
You're a chef, dude.
Well, yeah, I know. I'm still working on my sauces. I'm still trying to get all five of the basic sauces down. So I'm working on that. But it's like I can't do everything, and I really wanted to get, you know, more of the female bull hunter involved, more of the young, and so, you know, it's hard to do. It's trying to find the young and women who are really as avid as we are. It's when you find one, you've got to hold on to them.
Yeah,
you
know, right.
And bring them into the fold, you know, with welcome arms, and help nurture them and make them grow and become, you know, a vital part of what we all are.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of,
and there's a lot of females. There's a lot of women who are traditional shooters that they need exposure, and they're out there doing this, and I don't know, maybe if they think it's a man's world. Well, it's really not, okay?
Right,
it's, I encourage more women to submit material and to query us and come on. And same with the young kids. You know, that there's that little Russian guy over there in California. He's probably 16 or 17 now, 18 maybe now, and he's got a piece coming up where he shot a pig here this last year in Northern California, Dmitry Volkner. And he's been writing, you know, he did do that one, if you remember, the possibles bag out of a testicle from a deer, I think is what he did. Or not testicle, but the nutsack, right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the kid is something else. I remember when we first started dealing, he wrote his first piece, and his mother's pure Russian, and she wanted to know, why do you want this? What's this? And why do you need a social security number and all this other stuff? And then, you know, it's like all of a sudden he's getting these checks for a couple hundred bucks and, you know, $300-$400 or something like that for doing an article. And she's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Because they live very frugal life in Northern California, and he's got one mentor, which is good. And so I encourage him to write more. And he's pumps. We get at least one a year, at least. But it's interesting that he's learned all the stuff by himself.
Yeah.
He goes out and he shot deer and he shot this wild hog, which is a nice hog up there in California. And that piece is actually in this issue, which is off the press now, and we'll be shipping out here this next week.
Right on. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's the August-September issue. We're trying to get this October-November lined up. I've got to do some traveling. I've got a lot of traveling coming up. I'm going to be in Alaska for 10, 12 days, then turn around and a week over in Lake Kachess in Washington with my brother and probably my younger sister. The six of us are going to get together for reunion and a family meeting and stay, do some water skiing and jet skiing and just hang out, drink wine on the lake. I mean, he's got a beautiful lake house over there. So that's coming up. And so I don't know, I've got so many things going on. So August I'll be gone for another week chasing something to be announced later.
So
I love keeping things a secret.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys got a lot of things simmering.
Yeah, we'll talk.
Yeah. Sounds like you got a lot of things simmering that are going to just be this next year from traditional bow hunters is going to be, I'm excited. Sounds good.
Well, we're hoping so. You know, there's a lot of changes. And the reason why is that it's, life, business world has changed a lot. And this virus issue is really, every magazine lost about 50% of their newsstand distribution.
Right.
Because stores shut down and they're not taking them. And it's just, it's painful to see it happening, but it was inevitable. And more of them are just coming off the newsstand because it's just not a viable or economical way of getting the magazine out.
Right.
You can't keep losing money every year on newsstand magazines. Yeah. It's not healthy. It's not smart. So we're going to be investing that money in advertising outside the realm of us and get outside the fold and looking more of a, trying to gather a few things. I've got some other people working on getting me on their podcasts, which are totally out of what we're doing. And I thought, well, this is great. So hopefully there'll be three new podcasts in different things.
Cool.
And, you know, outside the realm of traditional, but hunting, and not just hunting, but also just personality places. One of them's a realtor, and he just likes to have people on show. And it's actually a video cast. And talk about life and different things because he's a very successful individual and he's proud of what he's done. He's never has a bad day. Just a happy guy. So we'll see how that works out. I'll let you know down the road when all this happens.
Right on. Well, good. Thanks for coming on. Is there anything else you guys wanted to cover? We need to get you on and just do more hunting stories. Those were awesome.
We could probably go for quite a while if we kept doing memories from hunting camp. Some things are not shareable.
But, of course.
I really like the old guy's rule photo cover.
Yes.
Everyone says, "What are you guys doing?" I go, "None of your damn business."
That's right. Let your imagination run wild. I mean, I just thought of a couple more stories from that hunt.
I don't know. Should we talk about them?
Well, yeah, I think it's okay. I mean,
okay, go ahead. Let it rip.
Just a quick one. I know we've gone on for quite a while, but I remember one morning I was beat. And we heard a elk bugle or a cow call or something just in camp, you know. And I hear this noise, and it's TJ ripping his sleeping bag apart and grabbing his bow, and there's an elk, and he ran out in just his skivvies. I mean, nothing but his skivvies. Did you even grab some flip-flops?
I don't even know if I had skivvies on. I might have been naked. No, I didn't. No. I did the same thing. I said, were you in camp that time that there was a big mule deer and I run back in and grabbed my bow and chased him down and never got a shot?
That was the next morning.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, that's... Yeah. See, our mind...
And the coyote started, howling, and he's out there calling, and I should have gotten my video camera out and got out of bed, but it was just like I was just laying there enjoying the show from what I could hear.
Well, you know, I over the years, several animals have been killed right at the tent, so you never know what can happen.
Oh, yeah.
A couple of years ago, I had wolves, and I was alone there, and I had wolves in camp, and I had that elk out there that was about three or four years ago. I had an elk hanging, and I was by myself, and the wolves were out there circling the camp. Mm. At 1-2 in the morning, and I had to stay up, build a fire, and finally the next day it was going to be 90 degrees. I'm going, well, I got to go, and so I had to load it all up and get out of there. But I haven't seen a wolf up there for about a decade, but you hear them every year. They are in camp, their tracks are there, and I always have a wolf tag, and they're cheap. They're like $11, no limit on them anymore, because there's so damn many.
Yeah.
But I would love to arrow one in my hunting area. So, right. You know, it's always an opportunity, and I'm seeing more and more bear every year. So you never know. It's just got to be out there, enjoy the time, and maybe something to walk by.
Right.
Well, the last time we were there, the wolves had them so that I saw several elk, but I never saw one walking.
Yeah.
They were always running. Huh. We were the only ones up there.
Yep. Yeah. Well, it's the same way now, too, with the zone. They've gone to that damn zone. And I haven't seen another hunter. I've seen people drive by on four-wheelers. Most of them, though, are the people who live there. And because they have that during the summer, they just go up the roads for the ski resort, and they just make a big loop. And, I mean, it's just a bunch of clowns. I mean, one time I'm sitting there in camp, the old camp. I had to move it. All the trees finally fell down. And I'm hearing, you know, rain, ATVs going by and this and that. And so I look up, and there's a guy comes by, and he's on one, his wife's on one, and his kids are on daughter's on a pink one. And there was like five of them, three kids and the parents, and they circle around that salt lick that sets out by the road. Right. He goes, oh, look, he said, look, there's a cougar track. And I'm going, what? So they screw around, they're driving around and showing the kids this cougar track. I go out there, and there's no cougar track. There's not even a bear track. There's not a wolf track. It's all cow tracks. And it's like, and then they just continue on their way. And it's like, so they never get off the ATV, and they don't bother me. So where I'm at now, Weez, I moved that camp over almost to the ledge where the lava flow cliff is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's down there, and it's back in these trees, so it's totally hidden. It's windproof, lots of shade, and it's a nice camp. And the wall tent does fit inside of there. I'm just using the big Cabela's 8-man now for two people. That gives you enough room.
Right.
Because the wall tent's nice, but, you know, it's a lot of work, and it takes a lot of room in the truck, especially if you're going to have a wood stove. And anymore, September's going to be 90 degrees, 80, 90 degrees. So.
Yeah. Yeah. But
I'm looking forward to get back up there. I did not hunt last year because it was goats, and I didn't hunt late season. I didn't do anything last year. So this year I'm done. I'm going antelope hunting for sure because I will get a tag, and then elk and deer, and hopefully late season we'll see.
Yeah.
Never know.
Right.
We
on.
Don't. I mean, that very first phone call we talked about back in '89 at. The late mule deer hunt out by your
It's a rough hunt, but then again, it's really not, because if you get the snow, they're in the rut, and their deer are all over the foothills. Well, you know, 2 years ago, I killed that doe here on my property, just out the back door, and but I had deer moving through the property all the time, and so I just sat down there and watched this little coulee, and was able to shoot that big doe late in the afternoon, in that late season, right at the end of November.
Mm-hmm.
And that story will be coming up because it was a cool. Long story. It was like 17 degrees and icy, and that's a long story. We'll figure it all out.
Okay.
It'll be out. I think it's actually in the April, May, or the June, July issue. It's just a short piece.
Cool.
Looking forward to it.
All right, guys. Well, so can you post that cover that you had with the old guy's rule or whatever somewhere on your
sure
yeah
I I'd made, love to I see made that a mock again. Cover
yeah
I can do that
yeah and then maybe I could even use it for the thumbnail for this podcast, but that'd be pretty cool.
Well, it probably fits the bill,
you
know?
Yeah,
we're getting close to the boo hair stage, so
I don't know how much we rule anymore, but I can think so.
In our mind.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys, for coming on, and thanks for sharing that, you know, the times you guys had together with us all. I think that's just as important as how to hunt. I think why we hunt is probably more important than how we hunt. So,
well, good deal. It's been fun. Appreciate you inviting me on.
Well, thanks for coming on. And again, Jerry, thanks again for coming on as well. So I'm going to.
Anytime.
Go ahead and wrap this up, and we'll get out of here. All right. Thanks again for listening to the Barebow Hunter Podcast. And if you guys could, leave us some reviews over on iTunes. Thanks a lot. Thanks for joining us on another edition of Barebow Hunter's Podcast. Hey, if you like what you heard, please give us a rating down below. We like the 5 stars. And follow us also on Instagram under Barebow Hunters. Go to our YouTube account.
Bearbow Hunter at YouTube under the Life Outdoors heading. So that's Bearbow Hunter's YouTube under the Life Outdoors. Also, go and join Bearbow Hunter group on Facebook. Thanks again for listening.